Hey, volleyball coaches, the new USA Volleyball Coach Academy is available now. Subscribers will have access to engaging interactive modules taught by top coaches from across the country, including national team coaches and staff. From fundamentals to advanced play, all coaching content is based on the USA Volleyball development model to help you coach the whole athlete. USA Volleyball members will have free access to the bronze tier. When you're ready to level up, you can subscribe to the silver or gold tiers. Live online sessions are only available in the gold tier. Watch out for more information on USA Volleyball social media and the USA Volleyball website.
City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to 2023, and welcome to episode 55, our first episode back of the year of our first episode of the new year of 2023.
New year.
I still can't speak. Stephen, how you been?
2023. Let's go. I don't know how we're going to top last year.
We got some
pretty good year, but we have some ideas. We have some things on the horizon. But yeah, I'm doing great. Excited for the new year of the podcast, and love how we ended last year with the podcast. And I'm sure we'll get to talk about that here in a little bit. But first off, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Consistency, you know, just trying to be more consistent in everything I do overall, from work to me playing volleyball recreationally, to me coaching volleyball, to communicating with people, just consistent overall. I do have one specific goal. I have to play in a mountain tournament this year. One goal I have for sure. What about you?
Love that. Maybe we should team up.
Open
level. Little podcast team up.
Little podcast. We got our shirts.
Open level. You'll have to find somebody else.
I'm totally kidding. Not grass for sure.
A or double B, and I'll be your partner.
Let's do A or double B. I'm down for it.
Sweet. I've played in all of them. They're all so much fun. So
USA Volleyball Show coming to a mountain tournament near you. Not really.
Yeah.
Just the ones in Colorado. But
that's right. Consistency, though, that's good. I didn't know we were going to get that deep with these, but
it could be consistently, you know, being funny. I don't know. It could be anything like that.
I love that. No, that's great. I didn't really think about any resolutions until probably a couple of days ago. And, you know, my wife and I moved into our house last year and still have yet to hang anything up. So that's kind of my resolution, just to to get the house more decorated, more together. A couple boxes still to unpack, some furniture to be purchased. So, get the house together, get the house in order.
That's a good idea. I need to get my apartment together. I still haven't put anything on the walls, hung anything up or anything like that. I just moved my desk to where I actually want it to be in this place. And just, it's a slow process. You know, it's just, you're doing a lot and then you get a little bit of time off. You're like, I'll do it later. It's not bothering anything.
Yeah, a little bit here and there through the year, and you'll get there for sure.
You get there by December.
That's my plan. Yeah, we'll check back in December. We'll see if I have anything on the walls at that point.
Well, I mean, you know, Happy New Year to you and all the friends of the pod listening here. Let's take a little bit of time to just talk about what happened at the AVCA convention, the American Volleyball Coaches Association.
Nailed it.
Omaha, Nebraska. Wow. Where do we start with that experience, man?
It was cold.
Oh, it was so cold.
It was a different kind of cold, wind chilling cold.
Yeah, like you walk outside and like it just hurts. Like it's just, your face just hurts. And it's just, your nose goes numb and it's just
different.
Also, but also like that's just part of the experience, right? Like
I could do that without I could have been without that. Nice try.
No, that that was that was my first time at ABCA, first time at that convention. And it just blew me away every single day just to be in that convention center, on the floor of the convention center with all the vendors and everybody there, all the coaches around, all the presentations that I got to sit in on, and just see that a different part of our community. I don't know if I had, at least in a while, haven't seen a bunch of coaches all in one place. And that was really cool to see.
That was so beautiful to see. And just literally it's a giant, not even a classroom session, because there are so many live demos and tutorials and walkthroughs happening like on course as they're happening. And of course you have your demonstrations happening or your sessions happening and meeting rooms too there, but it's just so interactive. And then there's so many amazing, you know, volleyball related booths that were there and vendors that just really help you apply just anything really related to volleyball to your coaching or playing game or just overall knowledge of just the sport. You know, we were there on behalf of USA Volleyball. We had our huge booth and, you know, we had a few different, you know, pro leagues there and just literally anything you needed from, you know, rest and recovery to volleyball equipment to, I don't even know, so much there. It's just a lot to take in. And that's not even like the half of it. I mean, we also went to the Final Four matches and we also got to, you know, cover media for the national championship game, which is insane.
Yeah, that was wild. I don't think I was fully prepared for that experience. I had seen it on TV. I knew how big it was, but I didn't really know how big it was until we were directed to our seats front row on the court, which was super cool. That was an awesome experience. And just to see that level of volleyball up close and it was insane. And a lot of those athletes we've kind of read about through, you know, being involved in our NTDP program and junior national teams, collegiate national teams, but haven't seen much in person. So it was really cool to see those athletes and just those teams and those coaching staffs in that moment and to see how much it meant to them and those programs to be in that moment. It was really cool.
100% agree. And I think what really made this moment that much more special was the sold out attendance there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen volleyball play to that capacity before. You know, I've seen our men's national team play, at Walter Pyramid and at Cal State Long Beach. I've seen them play at the Galen Center at USC. And those are there are a lot of people there. Like I'm not trying to deter anyone from that too, but the Chi Health Center in Omaha is a little bit smaller. I think capacity was just over 16,100 or something like that, but it was sold out there. And just to have a sellout crowd on all three tiers and three levels of the venue and to be where we were. Hi, PK. Hello, sir. PK and my cat just entered the frame, but just to have them there the way they were and just everything just happening was just Texas fans in one area. We have Louisville fans in another area. And then their bands were there just to make it sweeter. Like, gosh, I love a good band. I used to be a band, I don't want to say band nerd, but I was a band player in middle school, all through middle school, actually. So I love seeing that too.
What instrument did you play?
I played the trombone and I played the baritone.
Oh, so cool.
Love it.
You still got those skills?
I don't know if I still got those skills too. I kind of translated into playing the bass guitar now, but it'll take some practice. But love instruments, man. I love music. So it was really good to see that. This guy, he's just gonna leave frame right now. It's fine.
PK entering the fray. No, such a cool event, like you talked about, like we've been talking about. But one of the highlights from that for me was seeing the recognition of our Olympic and Paralympic staff on the court was just, and side by side was so cool. Just in that volleyball environment, sold out crowd, like you said, just seeing those Olympic and Paralympic coaches there and recognizing their achievements in Tokyo, both programs winning gold medals. The U.S. women's national team and the U.S. women's sitting national team coaching staffs there. And I know how much that meant to them, how much it meant to those programs, and saw a lot of the athletes interacting with that, engaging with that on social media too, which was really cool. So, yeah, just, gosh, I don't know. I don't know how we're going to kind of live up to that hype that we had there for that. But what, where's the next year, Tampa?
Yeah, so there's only one way to live up to it is if you go in 2023 and just repeat it, because, gosh, one, I love the weather there in Tampa, but two, it's just like us talking about it now does us no justice, because there's just so much taken, so much happening at one point. And even like the coaches games that were happening around that time too, like I really got a chance to meet so many just good, interesting coaches that was just one wanted to have fun, they wanted to play, and obviously two, they took everything there and applied, they're just applying everything to just become better coaches. And that was really good to see, us with us being, you know, in a general coaching shortage, and we're in an official shortage here too, but it's really good to see just that quality, or those coaches just trying to come in and make themselves better for, you know, the athletes that they coach, the people that they represent, the people that come in and, you know, choose to play for them. It's just really good and reassuring. It was so good to just experience that too.
Yeah. Thank you so much to the ABCA for inviting us out there, allowing us to be part of that podcast center there. That was really cool too. Just the amount of people that, you know, were walking around and getting to see the podcast, kind of see the podcast for the first time. Cause we haven't had that many live recordings before, so that was cool, and the people that were walking around were kind of a big deal.
I know, man, what did that one guy say? Man, those podcast guys are all over the place. Those
podcast guys are all over the place. Yeah,
that was great.
You know, to see Daniel Scott kind of walk when we were talking to Tama at the podcast center. Daniel Scott, Taiba, Hanif Park walked by too. Just never know who you're gonna run into at that convention. That was really cool.
That's so great.
Yeah. Thank you to ABCA for inviting us out there and having us be a part of that, and NCAA as well for having us out for the Final Four. That was an awesome experience, and one that surely we will never forget. That was really cool. But moving on, we could geek out about ABCA and NCAA and that whole experience for multiple episodes of the podcast. But moving on to this episode, let's first start off with, in case you missed it, our last two episodes were recorded while at ABCA, episode 53 with U.S. men's national team and UCLA men's volleyball head coach John Sparaugh, and then episode 54 with U.S. women's national team assistant coach Tama Miyashiro. Really great conversations with those two. Learned a lot about them, their personal lives, their vision and goals looking ahead to this season, as well as looking ahead to Paris, to the Paris Olympics in 2024. So you can watch those also, watch those two episodes on the USA Volleyball website and USA Volleyball YouTube channel. That's usavolleyball.org, our website. Check them out right now. They're, again, great episodes, great conversations. And I think you get a little bit more out of watching them too. So if you already listened to them, go check out the video versions and you might get a little bit more out of it. I think they're really cool. And jumping in with our first news with Hughes of 2023, Clarence, give it to him.
All right. Well, I haven't done one of these in a while. I'm kind of spoiled off of the live interviews we've been doing. Those have been great. Like, just to kind of touch on that, just really great to just sit down with people. And PK, oh, look at that. Just in the background on a cabinet now. But anyways, news with the Hughes. With Hughes, excuse me. The National Team Development Program, aka NTDP, held a successful winter training series late in December in Southern California. Note, Christmas time around California, it was about 80 degrees. Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that. But
pretty nice.
More than 30 USA volleyball regions were represented, 120 beach athletes, and 260 indoor athletes. The program gives junior athletes the chance to practice with and play against some of the best competition while also working with top coaches from across the United States. Congratulations to all of those who attended. 37 athletes with ties to the USA Volleyball National Team Development Program, once again, NTDP, were named to the 2022 American Volleyball Coaches Association, AVCA, Girls High School Volleyball All-American Teams. And again, congratulations to all of those who earned this honor. That is a huge, huge thing. So a big round of applause to all of you. Congratulations to Betsy Flint and former guest of the show, Julia Scholes, for winning gold at the 2022 Norseca Beach Volleyball Tour Finals in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. Also, congratulations to Theo Brunner and Kame Schalk, who took third bronze there as well. Kelsey Robinson-Cook and Catherine Plummer won the 2022 Volleyball Women's Club Championship. Women's Club World Championship title with Italy's Prosecco d'Oc e Moco Volicoliano late at the end of December. Also, congratulations to them and their club, as well as Chiaco Bogu and Kara Bajima, who took silver with their club from Turkey. More on these and all other news items at usavolleyball.org. And also, you can access more news clips and features on our USA Volleyball social media channels.
Nice. A lot of hard pronunciations in there, but you did it. You did it. That was tough.
Give that about a C plus.
It sounded good. It sounded good. Italian is such a fun language to speak. Mm-hmm. or hear, I guess.
I think both. I think both.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, now on to today's show. We are excited to welcome Michelle Meyer, founder of NIL Network and NIL coordinator at San Diego State. NIL, or name, image, and likeness, is a hot topic right now in the sports world, specifically with collegiate athletics. Michelle breaks down what NIL is, what it means for collegiate athletes, how junior athletes can prepare as they start the recruiting process, and much, much more. Let's get right to it. Here's Michelle Meyer.
All right, Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. I just found out that you worked in the beach office in Torrance, and somehow our paths never crossed and we never met. But would love to hear more about you, your background, and kind of your introduction into volleyball.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
excited to chat about all things NIL. My background is all in volleyball. I played collegiately at UC Santa Barbara, professionally for a year in Denmark. Got into coaching, coached the beach volleyball team out at University of Hawaii, Pepperdine, and then worked at USA Volleyball for a couple years out of Torrance, running the beach high performance program. And really, in 2019, I was working on a project actually for the AVCA to build a strategic plan to get beach volleyball added for men collegiately. Now, COVID kind of shut that down, but I was really studying, you know, all the economics of intercollegiate athletics, and that's when California passed the first state NIL bill. And I was like, holy moly, this is coming to college sports sooner than later. The following year, an article came up on it. I was like, Florida snuck in there. They passed their NIL bill. It's going into effect next year. And nobody was talking about it. I thought it was the craziest thing that we would have the biggest change, in my opinion, to college sports pretty much since Title IX. And, you know, there wasn't anything out there. So I started NIL Network and really just wanted to pull together resources to help everyone understand and prepare for that change.
Could you, and I'm still very new to this as well, and understanding what it is, but could you kind of tell us exactly what NIL is?
Yep.
And then just kind of the impact it's having and gonna have on the sport, all sports, and specifically the sport of volleyball.
Yeah, so NIL stands for name, image, and likeness. It's your three pieces of your right to publicity. Something that every U.S. citizen has, except for college athletes, up until last July 1st. Names for obvious. Your name, your image is pretty obvious. Your likeness, not as obvious. It really is your semblance. So if you're thinking autograph, an outline, or a cartoon character that kind of resembles you, that would be your likeness. So first year and a half, now we have our 500,000 NCAA athletes that are able to take advantage of this. And it's really through partnerships, sponsorships, endorsement deals with brands and businesses. So we saw most of the activations happen on social media, on Instagram, where they will partner with a brand. They'll say, hey, what a great product or service. The brand pays them, you know, whatever that amount is. The company then gets a new audience because they are utilizing the audience of the college athlete to promote it. So there's also the other pieces, entrepreneurship. Quite a few athletes have started businesses, summer coaching camps and clinics, and are now able to use their name, image, likeness to promote the camp and clinic versus before they had to kind of rely on other ways to market it out. Right. So very big change, and it's all over the map right now because we're playing by NCAA has an interim policy. We have about 35 states that have a state NIL law in effect, and then the institutions all have their own policies as well. So yeah, it's a wild landscape.
Yeah, kind of wild west right now a little bit, right?
Yep.
So how did you specifically start to get involved and become an expert on all things NIL?
Yeah, I mean, I really got interested in it when I was doing that project for the AVCA back in 2019. And I think when California passed their law, I talked to anybody who would talk to me about it, because I looked back to my time when I was coaching at Hawaii and thought about my previous athletes, and they would have loved to take advantage of this kind of stuff. And not necessarily maybe from the social media side, but even going out and coaching private lessons or doing some of their own businesses. And I was like, this is the right move to make. Now, of course, I looked at it from the lens of volleyball and beach volleyball and was like, the entrepreneurship, the coaching is going to be fantastic. And yeah, just was studying it and pulling together all these different resources and trying to share them out. And because it's such a brand new industry, there's a lot of startups around. People started reaching out just to make that connection from different companies in the space and universities. And I loved it. That was a really fun space. So here we are.
Yeah. I guess some of the obvious positives you've kind of touched on are just athletes getting paid, starting their own businesses, having that freedom to start their own businesses, entrepreneurships. But what are some of the, like, I guess, less known, less obvious positives for an athlete having an NIL?
I think that, I mean, the one that I've heard most from athletes is they just aren't as, before they felt like they're always tiptoeing around and like, man, will this cost me my eligibility if I do this type of thing that should be legal? And now they're going, okay, I can go out and I can confidently, you know, pursue some different monetization opportunities. And a lot of our athletes, you know, even in our Olympic sports especially, they're not on full scholarships, but they are full-time students, they're full-time athletes. And so it's really difficult for them to hold part-time jobs. So NIL affords them the opportunity to, I mean, it's still work. It still takes quite a bit of time, some of these opportunities, but they can do them on their own time and when they're available to do them instead of having a set schedule as you'd find in a part-time job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What what you've seen, how do athletes kind of go about, you know, getting an NIL deal? What resources are out there, I guess, for that?
Yeah, one of, I'd say the top things that athletes are utilizing are these digital marketplaces. So, gosh, there's probably about 100 in the space now that some of them are focused on connecting athletes with brands. So brands will come on, they'll have a job listing that athletes can apply to, or an athlete will pick a profile and the brand will reach out to them. Some of these other marketplaces are connecting athletes with their fans, so more of an athlete to consumers, either for, you know, digital experiences, shout outs, FaceTimes. There's some NFT companies as well. So I really think the marketplace is probably the easiest way for them to get started in this. Some other, if they want to do it themselves, like some athletes that are more entrepreneurial, they are making a list of their brands that they want to partner with and finding them on LinkedIn, adding them, reaching out and saying, hey, this is who I am. This is why I could give your business a really good return on investment for this type of marketing campaign. And another thing I really like about NIL is, you know, they're getting those real life skills before they're going off after they graduate. Especially with my beach volleyball background, where our athletes graduate and they go on to the AVP or they're playing on the professional tour, they again can't hold those full-time jobs. So they are trying to pull together these partnerships and sponsorships and learn all of those nuances after they graduate, when they're also trying to find their own coach, their own gym, manage everything in their life. Now, potentially they'll have those relationships and some partnerships and understanding of what a, you know, a sponsorship can look like and go from there. So that's one thing off their box when they're trying to pursue that.
What have been some some common challenges or points of just causing some hesitancy towards NIL? I know you mentioned eligibility was a big thing, just, you know, not being sure of, you know, the right and wrong, what to do, what not to do between that. But have there been any other challenge points that kind of caused that hesitation?
I think it is a lot more work than any of them anticipated. Once you get outside of that 0.01% where you have the boosters and donors that are just straight using it for a recruiting advantage, for most athletes, it's going to be work. If they're needing to build, if they want to do social media activations, then they need to build their social media profile. Mm-hmm. If they want to partner with local businesses, which I think will be most of the opportunities in 5 years or so, they are actually, the athletes themselves have to not only be proactive, reach out to the business, but they're onboarding them as well and educating them on what NIL is, what it looks like, and why this local business should consider partnering with athletes. So it is a lot of opportunity for these current college athletes, but it is a lot of work, and they're having to do that whole haul versus, I think, 5 years down the road when the local businesses understand NIL, they have their budget line for it, they know what's worked in the past, there's been many other examples, it's going to be easier for the athletes in terms of the time commitment and the education they have to do with businesses and brands, but I think it'll also be a little bit harder for them because these brands will have a lot more strategy of who they want to fulfill their campaigns. Mm-hmm.
How are the colleges getting involved? And I think you touched on it a little bit earlier, but is that coming into the recruiting process at all for the volleyball landscape?
Yeah. So actually for the last year, I've been working at San Diego State full-time as their NIL coordinator. I think I was around the fourth or fifth NIL hire in the whole country. And I thought it was pretty innovative for San Diego State. It's not even a Power Five. But now we're at about 30, 35 full-time staff that are just dedicated to helping with NIL. Outside of that NIL admin role, universities also have third-party partnerships. So Open Doors and Influencer are probably the leading companies in the space. They'll provide athletes. They have marketplaces. They have easy disclosure process. Most state laws require some sort of disclosure. And then outside of that, a lot of schools have also looked internally to create NIL courses, or there's clubs on campus that are working with athletes for marketing. So I think that is also really cool for regular students to get that real life experience. And I think that'll continue to grow as we progress in this.
Is the involvement different based on the university or school that you go to? And also, is it different based on the sport you play?
Yeah. It's the Wild West right now. So a lot of different interpretations of how much the school can be involved, and then also the school's kind of risk tolerance. Do they want to, there is a real liability if they are facilitating these deals for athletes, some Title IX equity issues as well. And so a lot of schools, San Diego State being one of them, it's very education-based. So my role, athletes could come in and meet with me. We can create a strategy together. We can talked about, you know, athletes similar to them and what they've done across the country. I can also talk to local businesses, our donors, but it's all from an education perspective and not that facilitation. So if a brand business comes to me and says, hey, we want to work with an athlete, which one would you recommend? I'm not selecting an athlete for them. I will send them to our Open Doors marketplace. They can filter on there to find, you know, an athlete that makes sense for their campaigns. But I can talk to them about, you know, what some other deals have looked like or whatnot.
What's the, I guess, for volleyball athletes listening, or maybe parents or whoever is interested in this, what's the reality for a volleyball athlete in this space? You know, what can they expect? What sort of brands can they expect to partner with? What kind of return money can they get from this?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's going to differ athlete to athlete, and especially as we continue progressing and maybe taking some of the Wild West out of this industry. Yeah. But for right now, the marketplaces are a really good place. They're not going to make life-changing money from that, because those are typically national brands that are trying to activate, I don't know, 1,000 athletes across the country. They're going to pay them $100 each, $50 each. But they can, those add up, right? And it's still more than they had before. And they're usually pretty simple activations where it's, hey, share this to your Instagram story, tag our account, something simple like that. And then there's other athletes that are more proactive. They're reaching out to the local businesses and spending that time to put together a deal and understanding the space. And that's where they'll get more meaningful meaningful partnerships and potentially more compensation, because that'll be, you know, in their own town.
Would you say maybe for the average athlete, it's more of a way to learn how to navigate these kind of, you know, contracts, working with businesses, especially like you mentioned, after college, a lot of your resources get taken away because you don't have the training facilities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But more of a kind of just a way to learn how to work in that space.
Yeah. It is like they're owning their own business.
Right.
They have to create their strategy. They have to know how to negotiate deals and have something that they're comfortable and confident with. The contract piece is very worrisome for me. We can't expect, you know, student athletes to be lawyers.
Right.
They're not. Yeah. That's what people go to law school for. Yeah. But we also know that they're probably not going to go find an attorney and pay them $400 or $500 to vet their contract for them. So that's a bit of a concerning piece. And then the last part of that after is, you know, now they're learning financial literacy skills that they can implement right now. How do you file your taxes? Those different pieces are really cool for them to learn now and then take them with them.
You talked about just kind of the things that worried you there, but just some of the other drawbacks that you have seen so far or maybe foresee in this space.
Yeah, I think that this Wild West landscape, I mean, it's our athletes are pretty exposed right now, you know, and they're so accessible also through their social media accounts. Anybody can go on, send them a direct message and say, hey, I want to represent you. You know, we're NIL agents and blah, blah, blah.
Scary, yeah.
Yeah. And some of these companies, because there's no barrier to entry, anybody can call themselves an NIL agent. There's no certification that they are playing the numbers game. They're sending about over, you know, a couple hundred DMs a day, knowing that some of these athletes are not going to have the resources to understand the contract and what they're signing into. So I'm a bit worried in the next couple of years that we'll see some of those not so great stories come out. I know a big concern also is the involvement of boosters and donors getting into that recruiting process. I think NIL along with the transfer portal has just been this kind of crazy blend of, you know, we've seen it mostly, I'd say, in football and men's basketball so far. But, you know, athletes would be risking their eligibility if they signed into a contract before actually signing with the school. So it's all these verbal kind of inducements that are going on with no actual guarantee that that compensation is there. So I've already heard a couple stories of, you know, kids committing to schools pretty much based off of what NIL money that they were guaranteed. And then they show up on campus and they go, well, actually, we're going to, you know, only pay you 20% of that or maybe even nothing at all. So the athletes, I mean, it's a hard space to navigate for them right now.
What are some examples of some of the, you know, agreements or, you know, contracts or just the brands that athletes get involved with?
Say it one more time.
What are some examples that, you know, athletes have been involved in and, you know, been able to kind of benefit from?
Yeah, I think that for the most part, the national brands have been the early adopters because they have budgets. They have people that are dedicated to understanding the space and resources to reach out to athletes and put some marketing dollars behind it. I feel in probably 5 years' time, it is going to be more of those local businesses, the restaurants around town that all of the students are eating at, because it makes sense for them to partner with student athletes who are, most of their followers are that young age demographic that is hard to get in front of, and usually a local audience as well. But yeah, it's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
And what are some of those top sports that, you know, that athletes play that they've been benefiting from? So, you know, just kind of ranking amongst all sports that colleges have to offer.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, looking at the statistics that have come out from some of these influencer open doors companies, football has been leading the way so far. I also don't think it's fair that they have over 100 players on their team and they don't really break it down by, you know, number of players. Yeah. How are they going to compete against a
scales a little off
team?
There. Yeah.
men's and women's basketball. Women's basketball has really been killing it on TikTok, actually. They've got a lot of good dances and things that they're doing up on there. Women's volleyball, I think, is the second women's sport. And something else, a trend that, you know, we've seen now for, I guess, almost 2 years, is that when athletes are in season is when they're the most marketable. But that's also when they're the busiest. So volleyball last year came out at the end of their season, I think, is the second sport behind football overall. But then it kind of died down as we went into the springtime.
How can high school athletes, parents even, kind of prepare themselves as they, you know, start to get into the recruiting process and start hearing about NIL and having to, like, make those decisions and just research on their own? How can they prepare themselves? Like, what steps should they be taking?
Yeah, I think understanding, you know, what is interesting to them for NIL activations. Like, is it, social media is the most common so far, but there are other opportunities as well. If they want to do social media, they're going to get higher compensation if they have more followers and a high engagement.
Right.
So how do they strategize around building up their platform so when they can take advantage of it, they're in a good position to do so? Don't buy followers. People can see right through that stuff now. There are so many tools out there that, and it's just silly. I can't believe how many are still doing that.
Yeah.
But and if they want to, you know, if they're interested in business, if they're interested, again, in coaching or some other things, how can they best position themselves and start taking kind of steps to build that strategy now? I mean, in terms of the recruiting process, if NIL is something that is important to them in college, they probably should look into what their different, you know, it's another now factor into that recruiting process where you have your relationship with coaches, your location, the level of the program, the teammates. Now, what are the NIL sort resources that are put in place? The third-party partnerships. Do you have an NIL admin you can go and speak to? Do they do jerseys, co-branded opportunities with the school? What does the city look like? I always say in San Diego, you know, we've got 1.4 million people, 85,000 local businesses, and not a lot of competition for sports sponsorship dollars because we only have the San Diego Padres as the professional franchise there.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And smaller, let's say Lincoln, Nebraska has a smaller town, but they are diehard for their Huskers, right? And so there's other kind of opportunities and what that looks like as well.
Okay, yeah.
How can high school athletes prepare themselves for the recruitment process with, you know, NIL's involvement in a lot of that conversation and just a lot of that prep work? How can they prepare themselves for that?
Yeah, I think one thing that concerns me a bit right now is that guarantee of NIL money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they really need to think about if they are speaking to a coach and they go, if you come here, you'll get X. To me, that would be a red flag versus a coach saying, hey, this is kind of the examples of what has been going on our team so far, or the deals and the different brands that they're partnering with. I think the guarantee of money it scares me a lot. And again, just understanding the different resources, talking to the current athletes on the team, what does it look like for them? Is the coach even supportive of NIL? I know that, you know, it is a massive, massive change that potentially outside of the revenue generating sports that coaches haven't even felt yet, and they just see it as a distraction. They don't want their athletes to do it. And so I think that is also, what does the team culture around it look like right now? So again, it's something so new still that it's going to continue changing and evolving.
I know it's still very new in the NGB space as well. I believe USA Triathlon was the first to launch a NIL collective.
Yep.
Is this something that you think NGB should get more involved in? I know they're not a college. They're kind of more on the professional side a little bit, but they deal a lot with the youth grassroots volleyball too.
Yeah.
But do you think NGB should start thinking about this more?
You know, it's interesting with this this new term of collectives, right? So it started as the Gator Collective for University of Florida, I think September of 2021. And it really is a business, an organization that is meant to support athletes of a particular institution. What has started happening, and with USA Triathlon and even outside of NGBs and a couple other spaces, is it's not university specific anymore, but it's sports specific, or even I think, what was there? There was like a women's athletes collective that came out.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's really a way of fundraising from the people who are support those athletes and then bringing in a pile of money and activating whatever they have been built to support. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity there for, like, for myself coming from beach volleyball. I'm like, man, that would be cool to have a beach volleyball type collective, because it is niche, and like the fan base, I think, isn't really so diehard for one school or another, but they just love beach volleyball and they would love access to some kind of, you know, beach volleyball exclusive access content or something like that. So, yeah.
Well, I'm sure. Oh, sorry. Do you have a follow up?
I was just going to ask how has the engagement been with volleyball specific players on the indoor and beach sides of things? You know, this could be, you know, good feedback or, you know, a little more hesitancy on, you know, indoors compared to beach. But, you know, how's the volleyball community been just in receiving, you know, these opportunities that are, you know, kind of newly appointed to them?
Yeah. I actually just talked a little bit about this in my session before. So there's a company called On3 that's a media company. And part of the databases they're building are kind of like valuations of athletes. So based off of their social media following, engagement, their actual on-court achievements, I don't know how they measure this, but like the public perception of this athlete. Mm-hmm. And I think that the top athlete was valued. Again, this isn't how much they've made. It's basically just an algorithm that pulls together some ideas about what they could potentially make in a year.
Yeah.
And I think the top athlete was around $100,000. But again, it's all just projections right now. For the volleyball athletes that have been very successful, they've had, you know, even before NIL went into effect, they had massive platforms, social media influencing, or they were entrepreneurs or things like that. So they were well positioned to take advantage of these new opportunities. I know that actually University of Houston just did a full team deal, which is pretty cool, with iLab. It was from an alumni of Houston that is the president of 10 different locations, offered the full team a deal. I think they're doing a meet and greet and a couple social media posts. So I'm hoping to see more of those full team deals. I think it makes it more comfortable for the athletes as well, especially if they're, a lot of the feedback I get is, you know, I don't want to be that kind of sellout of my social media platform. It's for friends and family. I don't want to be a billboard and blah, 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 which I totally get. I feel the same way about my own social media account. So some of those meet and greets with your full team, having a meal at a restaurant are very cool.
It seems like it'd be more comfortable, like you said, just because you're not by yourself trying to navigate that space. You have your teammates there.
Yep.
Your coach is probably helping out. Hopefully there's an NIL representative at their school helping out too. So
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. It's still, like you said, very new. And I'm sure that as this unfolds more, landscape becomes more clear, we'll have you on. We'll have you back on to kind of talk about the updates and stuff. But is there anything else that we've kind of left on the table that you'd like to, I don't know, bring to light or talk about that we missed?
I guess I would just say, like, I know it's a big change and it's scary for a lot of people. And there's a lot of, you know, big headlines and it's going to take time. I think it'll probably take about 5 years until it becomes a normal kind of functioning part of college athletics. But I 100% believe it is the right move. It is something that athletes deserve that right, as every other student on campus has. So stick with it. Don't quit on it.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be ignored. I think, like we mentioned before we started recording, shouldn't be ignored by colleges, coaches, whoever, because it is here to stay and it's only going to get more stronger as we go, and want to get ahead of it, I'm sure, because it is a scary landscape.
Yeah. And I think once they understand it not only does it become less scary, but it also creates that, I don't know, I guess like becomes less scary, I'd say.
More normalized.
Yeah. And it isn't as disruptive, because right now, I guess it's like, oh, this kid's doing this NIL deal and now everybody is talking. It's all, you know, a lot of noise around it. But if we can just learn and embrace it, then the kids will do it in their free time and they come and they train and they're students. And
where can people follow you on social media, or follow you and or email you and ask you questions from in the space?
Yeah, so the website I started, it's called NILnetwork.com. There's a ton of resources up there for athletes, coaches, administrators, brands, and businesses to understand just how this industry is evolving. I on Instagram, NIL Network, and Twitter, although I wouldn't say I'm very active on Twitter. And then every Wednesday, most Wednesdays, I host an open Q&A where anyone around the country can log in. It's a 30 minutes. They can come and get their questions answered. I think that's probably the easiest way if they have a couple questions. And yep.
Awesome. Well, Michelle, thank you so much. This was very helpful for me personally, because I just don't know a whole lot about it, but hopefully a lot of our listeners got a lot out of it, and excited to see how it all unfolds.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Such an enlightening conversation with Michelle, and just a ton of great information that on a topic that I didn't know a whole lot about going into that conversation with her. But great to be able to talk to her. And I think it was just a good jumping off point for all our listeners and anyone interested in that topic. It's a constantly evolving topic, updates coming out all the time, even new hires at colleges. That's a new position that's being included in the college athletics department, administration department, just an NIL coordinator, NIL director. Just a very interesting topic, and just something that recruits, one more thing that recruits need to consider as they go into their collegiate careers, for sure.
Yeah, totally agree with everything there too. Again, I myself, you know, just had very minimal information on, you know, NIL, name, image, and likeness, sorry. But I really love how she pointed out, you know, yes, she has her work she does specifically with NIL Network, but there's also so many levels to it, depending on what institution and college you're at and what sport you're playing. And just imagine like a blank canvas, and just, you know, Texas is going to go do things one way, but Austin College, who's a D3 school, might do something different. And then you can take yourself over to the West Coast and, you know, involve yourself with, you know, smaller school like I went to, California State University, Dominguez Hills, compared to someone or an organization like USC. There's just so many different tiers to it. And it's just growing. It's growing so fast, so rapidly. And, you know, there's a lot of good being done here, and a lot of effort being put towards the right foot. And I do also, you know, respect how she cautioned, like, you know, you just really have to be careful and do your research and make sure you're talking to the right people there too, because, you know, because this is a new space, because there are a lot of uncharted lands here. You know, there's a potential for, you know, athletes to be caught up or potentially caught up in, you know, conversations with, you know, people who don't have their best interest or best foot forward in interest at hand or best foot forward. And, you know, because of that, you have to really be careful. So just, again, really great conversation we had there, and we learned so much.
Yeah. And I think education of this topic is just the most important thing. If you get anything out of this conversation with Michelle, I think that's the biggest part. It's a topic that might be considered, you know, taboo or just not something you want to avoid. But it's here, and it's going to stay. It's, you know, made into NCAA policy now. So it's here to stay. So just the more you know about it, the more you're better prepared going into it. And yeah, like you said, it's continuing to evolve. Different, you know, it's getting updated every day, different information coming out every day. So definitely reach out to Michelle, reach out to the NIL Network if you have questions. They have tons of great resources on that website. Their Instagram account also has a ton of great resources and information. I saw just today when I was looking at their Instagram that Michelle does little Q&As every Wednesday. I'm not sure if she's carrying that over into the new year, but that was her last post, her last pin to post. So definitely be on the lookout for that. And just to check in every now and then, just to see what's new on the topic. That's NILnetwork.com. And then on Instagram, at the NIL Network. Definitely going to be for us. I think we're going to be checking in on this topic too, moving forward. Just new stuff comes up. Maybe we'll check in with Michelle just to see if there's anything new, anything big that we need to have her on again and just talk through and maybe go more in depth in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah.
But again, thank you so much to you, Michelle, for taking the time to sit down with us at the ABCA convention. We hope you liked our backdrop. We hope you liked the setup and, you know, the live interview aspect of it too. And you know, it's really good to find out too that Michelle's also a former USA Volleyball employee too. So, you know, we're all in this together. But again,
as all we connected. About,
literally. But as we learn more about the NIL and some updates, like you mentioned, Stephen, it's just good to be able to chime in and tune in, you know, about what's new in the topic. And also, this was, again, a live interview. So this was recorded from the USA Volleyball booth at the ABCA Commission is here. If you guys feel like you want to, you know, get that in-person aspect with us, you can watch this episode, you know, since we were there. So again, like we mentioned, this will be available on our USA Volleyball YouTube channel, in addition to all of our social media streaming platforms that we hope people were scanning that QR code as they walked by our lovely banner at the convention as well.
Yeah, that was great to have that banner there. Thanks, mm-hmm. Thanks to our marketing coordinator Bree for setting that up. That was sweet.
Oh,
to
yeah.
have that. We definitely saw people stop and scan that QR code, and then I think that was part of the why we got that guy who walked by said, "Wow, these podcast guys are everywhere."
Oh yeah.
But that was a lot of fun. Thank you again, Michelle, for taking the time to sit down and talk with us. Great conversation. But moving on with the episode, let's jump into upcoming events. We have a whole bunch, especially here on the junior side, looking at the early part of 2023. First up, we have the Windy City Girls 18s National Qualifier, January 14th through the 16th in Schaumburg, Illinois. The Winter Volleyball Championship Boys National Qualifier, January 14th through the 16th in Chicago, Illinois. The KC MLK Girls 18s National Qualifier, January 14th through the 16th in Kansas City, Missouri. The Lone Star Girls 18s National Qualifier, January 20th through the 22nd in Austin, Texas. The Southwest Classic Boys National Qualifier, January 20th through the 22nd in Austin, Texas. The SCBA Invitational Boys National Qualifier, January 21st through the 22nd in Irvine, California. The Mad Sand Juniors Beach Event, January 21st in Plano, Texas. SCBA Winter Series number 1, January 21st in Hermosa Beach, California. The SSOVA's January St. Pete Beach Tournament, January 22nd in St. Pete Beach, Florida. Wow, that is fun to say. Hard to say.
Fun to say.
St. Pete Beach, Florida.
Ooh, say that 8 times fast.
Good luck to everyone competing in those events, and shout out to all the USAV region setting up those events, hosting those events, putting them on. We know that that's a ton of work to do, that it doesn't go unnoticed, and those events don't happen without you. So thank you again for setting those events up. More details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org.
Now, for a few more indoor club reminders on the junior side here, registration is still open for those looking to compete in the Salt Lake City Showdown on April 8th through 10th and 14th through the 16th. As of today, right now, I can confirm that there is no wait list. So if you're looking to get a team into a national qualifier like Salt Lake City Showdown, get your team registered in AES ASAP. I think you will be accepted because I am the one who is accepting teams for that one. Also, other events like Sunshine Classic in Orlando, in the A6 Show Me Qualifier in Kansas City, I believe do have some wait lists, and registration will be closing for them relatively soon. So get on those lists sooner rather than later if you do want to compete. Registration updates. Now, registration updates for our national championship events. We have our boys international championship happening in Salt Lake City this year. Registration is now open for that one. Tournament dates are June 29th through July 6th. We have our girls junior nationals 11 through 13's national championship in Minneapolis. Registration is open as of today. And when I say today, I mean as of this podcast airing today on January 11th. Registration is open for that one. Tournament dates are June 14th through the 17th. Lastly, we have our girls junior national 14s through 17s in Chicago. Registration will be opening up for that one on January 18th. Tournament dates are June 28th through July 6th. And reminder, for our national championship events, you do need a bid in order to compete at nationals, with the exception of the Patriot division, which is a free-for-all division. So if you're looking at jumping in the competition with the Patriot division, register as soon as it opens up. It is literally down to the second with Patriot division, so don't hesitate there. Also, registration opens up for our adult open national championship being held in Dallas, Texas on January 25th. That registration will be a little bit more slow, but get your teams in. Opens is going to be a very, very exciting event this year. I'm so excited to be the lead on that going into a second year of that one. So all you adults out there, that's for you. Make sure you go ahead and get those teams registered, get your teams together, and we'll see you in Dallas at the end of May. Again, good luck to all teams traveling and competing at our national and regional qualifier soon, and good luck on your quest to earn a bid to nationals. More information on dates, divisions, and deadlines can be found at usavolleyball.org.
I'll give you a little break here after spitting out all that information. Great to have an events person on this podcast to spit that out and give us those reminders. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Remember, listeners, you can rate and review, share with friends, family, teammates. It really helps this podcast grow and reach new listeners. And check out our video episodes. We're going to be putting out a few more of those starting with this episode and a few more down the road. So check in with our website, usavolleyball.org, and our YouTube channel to watch those. Again, you'll get a little bit more out of it, I think, even if you've already listened to the episode. Just to be able to watch the interviews, I think, is a really cool experience. And we thank you for all your support. Do you know a club that should be featured or a story you'd like to share with us? You can email us at the USAV show at usav.org. Leave us feedback. Let us know how we're doing. If there's any future topics you want to hear about, let us know. We check our email, check our inbox every day. So
we do. I'm just kidding.
I do. You don't?
I do.
Okay. Check our inbox and we'll get those topics. Leave us feedback. We want to improve. We want to keep improving and serving the volleyball community. So let us know what you're interested in, what you want to hear about. Reminder, new episodes drop every other Wednesday. And until next time, thank you for listening to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson, produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.